This episode is brought to you by Mutinex Growth OS,
the marketing mix modeling platform that makes measuring ROI fast, easy, and cost effective. And this is my best radio voice.
That's the most creative thing you've ever said.
How's this for a call to action?
Mutinex Growth OS, your best decisions start here. Request a demo at mutinex.co. That's mutinex.co.
I think I'm an exceptional marketer and a pretty average artist, if I'm going to be honest.
Come on!
Welcome back to another season of Black T-Shirts. This show is about the power of creativity to transform business. And today, we talk to someone who has built a business through her creativity. CJ Hendry has made a name for herself in the contemporary art world through her hyper-real illustrations. And CJ has done it her way, building her own audience through Instagram with nearly 1 million followers and then selling direct to that audience, avoiding the traditional gallery model. There's a lot marketers can learn from CJ, who is a self-confessed average artist but exceptional marketer. It is his humble and self-deprecating approach that makes CJ so rare in the art world and such a pleasure to talk to. It's great to have her on the show. Welcome to Black T-Shirts, CJ Hendry. Are you wearing a black T-shirt?
Yes, always in a black T-shirt. Always, always, always. And that's not even just like a big stick up for this. I'm genuinely always in a black T-shirt.
Why?
Also, white's too impractical. White's too impractical because you put it through a wash and if you've got any colours in there or dark, it comes out grey. And like you have to be always wearing a nude bra, which is just too difficult to keep on top of.
Adam says that to me.
Well, yeah.
Thought so.
CJ, you, I did watch a TEDx video of you presenting in all white.
That was a long lost era. Okay, she's progressed. She does black. I've got two little children, and heaven forbid, if I leave the house in white, I'll come back with like poo scraped on my legs. Like, who knows?
And
so it's just safer to wear black, honestly.
And when you're in the studio creating your art, are you in a black T-shirt?
Yeah, always in black. At the moment, we're in the winter, so we're kind of in hoodies and jeans. But yeah, I think what I like about a black T-shirt, and I've heard this mentioned before, so I thought I might reiterate, it's almost like my uniform. It's the part of my life where I don't need to think. So like we just have, like my husband and I actually just share clothes, which is really embarrassing. But yeah, just the same thing every day takes out the effort and the thinking.
Well, that's exactly right. That's a bit of a theme for the creative people we talk to on this show, that they tend to not want to spend time thinking creatively about what they wear. They'd rather put it into their work. So same for you.
Is that how you guys feel as well?
Oh, we're just as older blokes trying to hide the, you know, onset of man boobs and things.
I actually do subscribe to the theory of one less thing to think about. I actually like that. Hey, and so what? So you've become very, very famous pretty quickly, and you did it initially for hyper-real drawings, kind of at scale, and we'll talk a fair bit about that later. But what were you like as a kid? Were you super creative? Were you good at drawing? Did you do the birthday cards really, really well?
As a kid, I was just a run-of-the-mill kid, in my opinion. I think I went to school, as most people do. You kind of have to do all the subjects. You know, like you have to do, like, math, science, English, whatever. I was relatively sporty, so I spent a lot of my time swimming. I was like a okay swimmer, so I spent a lot of my time swimming. That kept me out of mischief. I've always been very focused. Like, how do I explain it? Almost, I explain myself as like a loner, but I never feel alone, if that makes any sense. So I'm always just like floating around in my own head, doing my own thing. Never really caught up with anyone. Like, caught up in groups, I mean, and never caught up in drama. I'm just like very just happy in my own company, doing my own thing. And I think that's really set me in good stead for what it is that I do now. I can spend hours and hours alone just drawing. And now my practice has evolved into different things now, and still very happy just dancing to the beat of my own drum. And I think I've always been, a bit of a strange person like that, just very focused on doing the work, whatever that may be. I'm not focused on whatever anyone's really thinking.
But obviously, you must have been a good drawer. I mean, when did you discover this sort of talent to be able to draw things really well?
This is going to sound disappointing because, like, people sometimes want a clear, like, well, how did you do it give me the steps, what happened. I was okay at drawing and okay at art. It, what I think how it started, and this is the more bizarre thing to explain and something I really do struggle to articulate. I was okay at drawing, but it wasn't the fact that I was okay at drawing. It was more how drawing made me feel. I had so enjoyed being on my own and just truly in almost like solitary confinement. I enjoyed it so much. I enjoyed the methodical draftsmanship so much. I was okay when I started and I got much, much, much better because I spent so many like very considered hours. I'd say 10 hours a day, if not more, just at the drawing table, listening to podcasts, watching Netflix, whatever it may have been. And my skills really kind of developed very, very rapidly, very quickly over a very short space of time. I think within 6 months, I had just like gone from yay to nay in a very short space of time, purely because I spent so much time doing it. I made it like a thing.
It's kind of like the Beatles when they went to Hamburg.
That's, yes. Thank you, Malcolm Gladwell.
Yeah.
It's that from that.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Clearly, Adam and I haven't spent 10,000 hours podcasting. But would
10,000 hour thing, I reckon.
Yeah. But would you give that advice to anyone, though? Would you say, like, find a thing that you enjoy? Obviously, you enjoyed, as you say, enjoyed how it made you feel, and just spend a lot of time doing it and get really good at it. Like, do you really think you can master anything if you, you know?
I do believe that. I truly believe that to my core. I think I'm not one to put too much advice down, but you've got to remember, you've got to think of the type of personality you are and if that's of any interest. Like I've always said, I've always been very focused and very happy in my own company. So for me to spend 10,000 hours at anything is not particularly difficult because I am such a focused, quite intense person. I'm a little bit type A, you know what I mean? So I'm not kind of litchy. I don't really float between many things. I have a task or something I'm working toward, I'll get it done at any cost. Like, it'll get done.
And CJ, how come you're so good at courting and getting attention?
Okay.
For somebody so focused and I don't want to use the word introverted because you didn't use that word, but a low need for other people and so on.
I don't know in which regard you mean in terms of getting attention, because I don't really consider myself an attention seeker, but what I am good at in terms of creativity and art, I think I'm an exceptional marketer and a pretty average artist, if I'm going to be honest.
That's amazing. CJ, aren't you devaluing everything you stand for by saying that?
No, not at all. I tell everyone, when people are like, I want to buy some of your art, I'm like, save your money. I'm a terrible investment. Terrible investment. Don't do it. But I think I'm an okay artist. I think there's some exceptional artists out there, but I think I just turn water into wine, just marketing-wise, and maybe that's unusual for art. I'm not sure, but
I don't think it's unusual for art. I think it's unusual to be so flippant or cavalier with that statement.
But it's true. Like, there's no point in beating around the bush. These are facts.
I don't even know if you can say they're facts because art is so subjective and marketing is so subjective as well. Where does the talent then for being an artist start and stop versus the marketing of it? Or is it all the one thing?
So this is what's so funny about art. I think like art is one of the most unregulated industry in the world, in my opinion. In that, like you just said before, there's no, how can you put a value on art? Like, just because I can draw really well, why should that be more valuable than maybe some other people who do more conceptual art or performance art or art that maybe is not easy to put into a visual format for social media? You know what I mean? So, yeah, art's just a magnificent platform to just do stupid shit that no one needs. But it just do it. Like, I'm the most irrelevant person in the world. Like, art is, I believe it's like so unnecessary. So I really go out of my way to make it entertaining. And I try and do my best, like with the exhibitions and whatever it is that I do to make it, you know, entertaining for people who might be viewing or come to those exhibitions.
Yeah. In advertising, the rhetoric is always, oh, you're solving a problem. And it's all about solving this problem. But in art, there is no problem to be solved. You're just creating.
Correct.
And that's why I think the bar of creativity is higher when there is no problem to be solved. You're just making something wonderful. And then to truly stand out like that, that's much harder than just going in there and saying, oh, we've got this problem to solve, to me. So, hats off to you.
Well, thank you. That's very kind. I just, like I said, I don't even know how to say it. Through a series of unfortunate events, I find myself here as an artist. I certainly didn't, roll out to be in this position, but here I am. And it works, and sometimes it doesn't. And I just enjoy creating so much. I enjoy it more and more. The more I get to create, the more I'm desperate to keep doing it.
Is it that sort of relationship you have with it where you don't take it too seriously, it seems? And in fact, you've said you can't be too connected to your work, is something I've heard you say before, where, don't spend your whole year making one piece and being fixated on creating this perfect piece. You've got to create lots of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think you said if you create 100 pieces that are okay, a couple are bound to be amazing. Is it this sort of relationship you have with your art where you don't take it too seriously, you don't take your talent too seriously? Do you think that actually helps you create stuff that is, does it help you create, to help you be more prolific? Do you think this is actually part of your success, is the way you view art?
Potentially. I don't spend a lot of time thinking about what success may look like. I also, maybe to my detriment, and frustrated because I haven't done enough, and I've got a lot more that I want to do and a lot more I want to build and a lot more I want to say. So I think it's also a matter of who gives a shit about the shit you've already done, because that's in the past. You got to keep going and building and doing better shit. People may go, oh, wow, you've done some wonderful exhibitions. I'm like, I don't care. Like, that was, let's keep going and build on that and do other things. But yeah, success is a very open and determined. There has been some success, but I believe I'm genuinely just getting started. I think I've got some big shit in the burner.
Yeah, and it's how you feel. Coming back to this divide between the marketing and the art, so much of what you've done has gone viral and has been spreadable from the very fact that you started off on Instagram, you were discovered by a cool hunter. You use lots of different well-known brands like Gucci and Nike and so forth, and you put those in the center of your art. And the whole thing is almost designed to be spreadable. Is that by design? Are you thinking about how am I going to market this as I'm creating it? Or do you create something and then think, right, how do I market it?
That's a good question. Maybe at the beginning, I think it was more intentional because, when you're starting out, definitely at the bottom of the food chain. No one knows who I am. No one knows what I do. And so I think, to my benefit, I'm fortunate that my type of art is very visual and easy to understand and easy to consume. So if I was a performance artist or a conceptual artist, it's a little bit more difficult to put that in, sometimes in photographs or make a reel about it for social media, for TikTok or Instagram. It's a little bit more difficult, but because mine is so slappy in the face, obvious, it's hyperrealism. It looks like a photograph. It's like, oh, wow. Even those people who may not understand or appreciate art, they're blown away by it. So I'm kind of appealing not just to art world people, but I'm appealing to the masses. Not because I'm trying to, it's just, it is that easy to consume. Because people might show their friends like, can you believe this is a drawing, not a photograph? So it's easy to kind of start that conversation.
That I like that. It's interesting, right? You've got something talkable, the hyper-real thing, wow, so on. But then when you're choosing what to draw, are you thinking of the spreadability of it? And in my world, we often get a brief saying, we want this to go viral, And then if I get that brief, then I'd make sure we put things that are likely to go viral in the thing, though you put puppies in it because people like puppies.
Can I be honest?
Yeah.
No, I never think of things to go viral because in my, just from stuff I see on socials, and we consume, when I say we, I consume a lot of socials in a day just looking. You can tell when someone's trying to pull something off. It always feels a bit forced. It feels awkward and it doesn't feel right. I just kind of do think, I think sometimes it's in the magic and sometimes, a lot of the time, I'd say 90% of the time, things don't go viral. They just are. They just sit in the universe. You are probably talking about the 10% that does go viral, and that is pure magic. That is not something I've done on purpose. It just happened to be that way. I'm sure that's like with any business. I'm sure you can put in all the effort in the world and it's a pretty good business. And some fucking businesses just lap. And I'm like, what is it? Timing? Is it? I don't know.
I was so hoping you'll say, yes, I really just think about what's the latest trend. And if I draw that, it'll go viral.
But you do reference culture a lot, right? Like from Kanye West to Mickey Mouse, you've always had a big sort of cultural element to your work. How do you get a feel for that, how do you build your cultural sort of relevance and stuff, you know, and how important is that to your art?
It's just things that I'm interested in. Like I said, I'm not like the substance to the visuals is not like crazy deep. I'm not drawing death and destruction and all these type of things. It's just sometimes it's beautiful things. So it's already something that someone else has made that's beautiful. And sometimes I'm just manipulating something else that might be very simple. It might be a balloon or, you know what I mean? Something very cheap, and sometimes blowing it up and drawing it in a big scale. And I'm not trying to be relevant. Genuinely, I just draw the stuff that is of interest to me at the time. And beyond the drawings, sometimes I'll do exhibitions and those honing in on a bigger concept that I might be wanting to reference a little bit more. I genuinely don't spend much time thinking about how to be relevant because it's just of no interest.
So if you're not doing it in the art, where does the self-confessed brilliant marketer come into it?
Okay, so I'm an unusual artist in that I don't work with a gallery. So if you're an inverted commas artist, you will just sit down and make your art. And that is what you do. And you just create and someone else takes care of the sales and everything else. I'm a little bit different in that everything happens within my studio. We sell everything internally. We build, you know, like an exhibition may cost us $300,000, if not closer to $500,000. And we'll sell art off the back of that. So I'm a little bit unusual in that regard.
In marketing's world, your DTC.
Direct to consumer.
Yeah.
See, I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, you are. You basically cut out the middleman.
You're ticking all the marketing boxes. I mean, every modern marketer would want to be like you. Social media, tick. Direct to consumer, tick.
Cut out
the middleman.
Cultural
references, tick. I mean,
you've cut out the supermarket. You've gone straight to the consumer.
Yeah, it's a hell of a lot of fun. I really enjoy the... Maybe call me a micromanager. Maybe I am that. But I enjoy being able to do all the things, or at least learn. Like, I'm not doing everything. Don't get me wrong. I've got a great team who help get all this in action, get all this in motion. But I think we do a really good job. We get better every time. Some things we don't always pull off. Like, I'm sitting here, you're probably thinking, oh, wow, everything works out and you spend all this money and you make all this money back. No, some shit doesn't always hit, you know, and you're just like, damn, why did that not work? What was it? How can we improve? So we're constantly honing in to try and make the product as good as possible. For me, what's the most important thing above anything, above social media, above anything, in my opinion, is the product I make. So whether that's my original drawings, my editions, the merch I sell, whatever it is, the exhibition, I go to the ends of the earth to make sure that is as close to 110% as possible. I do not believe in selling cheap shit just to make a dollar. I think that is tacky and yucky. The type of brand and artist I am is to do the highest quality product that I can afford to make and build and sell it for as reasonable a price as possible, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes total sense. I mean, what you're really talking to me about is craft, right? Having a very strong level of craft. And it's interesting, again, coming back to the world of marketing and advertising, so much of it lacks that, right? It's just really disposable, hasn't had a level of care, doesn't have a level of beauty. When did you sort of work that out? When did you work out that, like, if you spend... you know, 500 hours on something and put that level of love and care into it, that just is more meaningful to you, it's more meaningful to someone who buys it. Like when did you work that out, that actually if I put the time and effort in, if I make it beautiful, you know, that's the important bit?
It's twofold. I'll try and explain it. It's not about working out. oh, if I put this time and effort in, it's going to be valued more. Like I said, remember, I'm in the art world. I'm in the biggest scam industry of all time. So it's like there are people selling paintings for tens of millions of dollars and they made it in a minute, all right? So it's not about the time you spent. It's about the perceived value, right? So I have always considered art to be like the Birkin theory. So the Birkin theory is the Hermes. You guys, all girls who are listening to this will know exactly what I'm talking about. Hermes make this handbag called the Birkin.
Yep.
If you go into Hermes and you try to buy Birkin, sorry, it's not available. How do you get a Birkin? It's this mystery that not everyone knows. But it's kind of like art. If it's constantly available, people don't want it. It's hard to get. People do want it. And it just so happens by pure coincidence and kind of by accident, I cannot make art that quickly. It is just a fact. And I can't produce it quickly enough. And just like I said, by accident, it's turned into like Birkins. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't do it quicker. There is other opportunities to buy things in terms of editions, which are like maybe around $1,000. So slightly lower price pointed, slightly higher volume. But even then, they're limited in time. They're limited in quantity. I don't make them available all the time. You can't just go on my website and buy shit. I don't even know what my website looks like right now, but I'm sure if you went on there, there's not much information. There's nowhere to contact us, nothing to buy.
It's just that your current Hoops edition is sold out is pretty much your current website. That's it.
Okay. Well, there you go. We need to update that. But yeah, it's just like, it's just nothing is available because it just, there isn't anything available. It's like, I'm sorry, we're just working on the next thing. Like, we don't have all this inventory just lying around. It just doesn't, my practice just doesn't work like that. Nor do I want it to be available.
But I think you're marketing now. I think now I'm just hearing the brilliant marketer.
Maybe, yeah.
Talking about scarcity of product and so forth. And I think, and I love the fact that nothing's available on your website because I'm sure that just increases the price of everything else that is available through other channels, for example. I come back to, you know, I think of the Banksys and the Warhols, and I think of you as an artist in that kind of world where so much of what you're doing is creating, as you say, perceived value in your art. And that's not to diminish your art, because no matter what your art is, you can still increase the value of it. Even if your art was really bad or really good, it's completely irrelevant to the quality of art. You can still do whatever you can to increase the value of it, which you seem to be very, very good at doing.
There's also there's an interesting tension too, I think, in the scarcity and almost exclusivity of your art, and yet the way you talk about it also want it to be really accessible and you don't have to think too much about it, and you know, social media helped you reach a lot of people. You know, there's a tension in that for me. Is that something you've thought about?
Well, I'm very conscious about the ideas I make in terms of exhibitions and all that type of thing, but in its simplest form, just bring it back to build a big, beautiful exhibition. Doesn't even need to be big. Make it slightly interesting, a little bit different, and go hell for leather and make that shit look as good as you can, and off you go. And what I see too often, not necessarily in art, but in a lot of things, people are trying to the old get-rich-quick scam, and I'm sick of seeing that shit. I see it with artists. I see it with clothes. I see it with everyone. Everyone thinks like, oh, I've got a social media account. We get rich and retire. I'm like, best of luck to you, kind sir. That is not how it works. I'm like, I've been at this for 10 years and there's a specialty, you know, like there's a cap as to how much I can kind of make each year. I can flood the market and leave town with the money, but I want to be here for a long time and I want to do a good job, or as good of a job as I can. And I'm not going to flood the market and I'm not going to make more work. I'm going to make things interesting, exciting, and you know, and I could sell 10,000 pieces in one go, but I'm not going to do that because I'm not a banana, you know.
But CJ, the other end of the equation is the artist who thinks that if I just do the most beautiful piece of art or the best piece of art I can, it's all about the art. It's all about that. Then the art will sell. Then people will want it. And I see a lot more frustrated people. I see a lot of frustrated people at that end. And I see a lot of people trying to hoodwink the market at the end you're talking about. And you seem to be in that kind of nirvana for an artist of doing stuff you enjoy that comes from a heart that's genuinely art, whatever that bloody means. But you've got this ability to make it popular and make a living out of it. And that's amazing. It's good, right?
Yeah, it is. When you say it like that, it really is. And how fucking grateful I am to be in the position talking to you guys about this is just beyond me. It is, because I also have artist friends who are also frustrated, and their work is exceptional, and they might make hyperrealism, and it is 10 times more detailed than mine ever will be. And you're right, they sit there with this beautiful work and it can't be sold. So there is a balance in art. Remember, there's that subtlety of making work and you're trying to sell things that no one needs. But yeah, why is it that somehow things have just worked in my favour? I think it was timing many, many years ago when Instagram was just kind of starting out. So very grateful for that timing, that my skills have certainly increased over the years. And I think, in all honesty, the money I have made over the years, I put straight back into my practice. And I think that's also been really important. If I look back, I've kind of put it back into building my practice to where it is now. And that is no accident. And that did not happen by fluke. It's been a very conscious reinvestment back into my brand, spending money on exhibitions that people are like, why would you do that? Just go and sell the work. I'm like, there's no storytelling in that. That's not very interesting. Just selling work for work's sake is just a piece of shit boring. So, yeah, I do build these fairy lands which kind of tell a bigger story and make the artworks make sense and put them in context. So, yeah, and most people would see that as a giant waste of money. For example, I was chatting to a gallery. Won't even say who the gallery was, but a really big gallery. They've got locations all around the world. And they were just like, great, let's collaborate. I'm like, sounds good. Just let you know, this is kind of like how things work in my practice. And I kind of like mentioned the investment I'll make in my exhibitions and what that may look like. And they just could not understand, nor were they even vaguely interested in taking that on. I'm like, well, this is how it works. So join me or don't.
You were discovered by Bill Tikos, the Cool Hunter, who curated cool things. I actually know Bill because I used to be a cool hunter didn't.
Not anymore. No,
this is many years ago.
No, yes, you are. Yeah.
Anyway, so he started his website. We had a chat once about being cool and looking for cool and all that kind of stuff. How does being cool relate to what you do, or is it just even disgusting to talk about it?
No, it's not disgusting to talk about at all. Being cool is not interesting. It's like, you know, you were saying something about being relevant. I'm like, no, that's not the thing. Going back to Bill, though, I have a lot to thank Bill for in those early days. He is an exceptional marketer. I jumped on the back of what he was doing and very, very, very grateful for that. Because I was just making my art, sold a few things, but through his, you know, his platform, I was able to kind of jump on and we built some beautiful things together. So yeah, I certainly couldn't sit here and say I've done it all solo, because we worked for many years together and he was fabulous. I've taken a lot from him for sure. The word cool is like not really.
It's not that cool. No. But you do live in a very cool place. You live in Brooklyn and you grew up in Brisbane, which feel like opposite ends of the creative spectrum, Brisbane versus Brooklyn. How important is environment for you? How much does Brooklyn inspire you? Do you find your creativity is different living in a place like Brooklyn than it was living in a place like Brisbane?
It's funny. I think I could make the work from anywhere, if I'm going to be honest, and I'm sure you guys are the same. Like, but what I do find funny is New York kind of has this fairy dust, perceived fairy dust. I call it the New York fairy dust. People think we're up to crazy cool shit in New York. I'm like, oh my gosh, if you knew my day to day, you would be very, very disappointed. We're up early. We go to the studio. We come home. We grind. We've got two kids. It's very methodical. It's very simple. It's very normal. But on the flip side, New York absolutely slaps. This place is a melting pot of everything you want it to be. So we were back in Australia at the end of the year for Christmas for a couple of weeks, and we arrived and I was like, fuck, everyone's white here. Everyone's just like, you know, upper to middle class. And it was just really vanilla and lovely. The sun was nice. We're at the beach. But geez, we came back to New York. I was like, this is it. It's like, it's just stunning. You've got everything. There was a guy, we got off the plane and there was a guy walking around in high heels and a tutu and no one even batted an eyelid. It's like, this is just how it works here. Like nothing is too unusual. And I think that's a beautiful place to be, because if you're someone who's a little bit different, wants to do something even vaguely different, this is a magical place to be, to just be anonymous and just get on with the shit you want to do. No one gives two shits about what you're trying to do. You just do it.
This episode is brought to you by Mutinex.
Are you going to start talking about Mutinex again?
Yep. It's that amazing marketing mix modeling platform that helps marketers make better investment decisions.
I thought it was more complicated than that.
No, not according to the script. They measure the true impact of marketing on your bottom line using clever computers and people.
Mutinex Growth OS. Your best decisions start here. For more information or to request a demo, visit mutinex.co. That's mutinex.co.
We know Henry too. We had him on the show. Great bloke. 97% human, 3% cyborg.
And you've talked a bit about the art sort of scene here in Australia being, I think you used the words, it's an unusual place for art. But, you know, the Archibald Prize is the biggest art prize. I think you even called it, didn't you call it like an old man's art award, I think you called it. But like is that part of it too? Like, is Australia, I agree with everything you said about, I lived in New York for 6 years myself. I know everything you say about New York.
He says that in every podcast.
So do you. You say cool hunting wherever you can as well. But you know, is there something too about the art scene here too in Australia? Like, do you feel like Australia is lacking a bit of sort of inspiration when it comes to art, creativity?
No, I think there's a lot of amazing artists in Australia. Like I said, there's great artists all around the world. I just think the thing that people really look up to as art in Australia is something like the Archibald Prize. And whilst that makes sense for some artists, it doesn't necessarily make sense for others. So for an artist like myself, if I had stayed in Australia and continued to try and push for that Archibald Prize as the be-all and end-all, I don't think I'd be an artist. I think I'd be talking to you to be perfectly honest. So I think it's just about the type of artist you are. I've got some artist friends who are constantly, you know, finalists in the Archibald Prize, and they are really successful, you know. So it just depends on what you're trying to do and create. And I think from an early stage, I was like, this is not my vibe. Let me go to New York where anything goes and no one really gives a shit what you're up to. You just got to do what makes sense for you, you know?
CJ, please give me an answer here. What award do you want to win if it's not the Archibald?
Oh, I don't give a shit about awards.
Come on, please.
No,
please.
There's no.
It's just us advertising people who want awards, Adam.
Is there really?
No.
Nothing?
What's like for you guys? What's the Oscars for advertising?
Well, there's a couple of very clear things, but Cannes Lions are a very clear, they're like the Oscars for advertising.
Right.
And then there's about 10 other shows related to that. But what recognition do you want? What award, how do you want the world to say, hey, CJ, you made it? And I know that's going to be kind of goes against you being inner driven and so forth, but is there an award or a newspaper that you want to say you're amazing, or a review or something?
You want me to say something, but I'm not, it's not it. I don't care. That's not what I do it for, really. We do it to keep building the practice. And to be honest, we got our finger. I'm not even getting it. This is for a different podcast, but we're building other shit that has nothing to do with my art at all. I think I find business and marketing very, very, very interesting. And it's just a link to other things that we're working on. And I'm very grateful to create every day, genuinely. But yeah, we are creating a lot of other things. Privately, which is super awesome.
So lately you have kind of, you've moved away, from what I understand, from kind of hyperreal drawings. You've done interesting things like the hoops installation in Miami. You've done playground where you've done kind of like an adult-themed playground, drawing inspiration from obviously having young kids at the moment, I take it. Well, tell me about your creative process. How do you come up with that initial idea for what you're about to do? Where does it strike you, and just if you can, try to put a magnifying glass on that a little bit.
Do you know where ideas come from? Like all over the place, obviously. But if I'm really fucking stuck for shit, I just go to Pinterest. On it, sorry, you know, you probably don't want to hear that.
No,
I
do.
But everyone can be like, travel the world and go and see things. I'm like, yes, great. But like, I've got little kids and I can't take them everywhere because fuck traveling with little babies and toddlers on a plane. Okay. So like when I'm stuck, Pinterest is a rabbit warren of visual imagery, and it just keeps feeding you stuff that you didn't expect. And just to see visual stuff, I find that a very good place to start.
And you're on Pinterest. You've got lots of stuff. Yeah, you've got lots of stuff happening at you. Then what? What happens next? What's the next bit of getting an idea?
I'm quite structured in my thinking, so I'm not kind of like, oh, let's just do something creative here and there. I try and do at least one big exhibition a year, two if we can be bothered. And so we're looking to do three different releases a year, one in April, one in the middle of the year, one kind of toward the end of the year. And we kind of just look to fill those gaps. And that sounds really simple in terms of fill those gaps. But, you know, like to keep the flow going financially and everything else, we have to make money at certain times of the year to be able to build upon other things. So that's kind of in a really simple way how things work for my practice. So yeah, generally speaking, the April exhibition is really big. So we're coming up to a big one in the desert in Nevada, just outside of Vegas in April.
Okay, so we're gonna keep digging into this because we want more on your process. So you've got the three big exhibitions. So you're thinking about what's the idea for one of these. You're in Pinterest. You've got all this visual stimulation. How do you start narrowing that down to an idea for one of those exhibitions? What's the process?
I'm not even trying to be coy. I don't have like a clear answer. You guys are just sitting there being like, fuck this, Mitch, I don't believe you. I don't. I can see it in your eyes. There's not like a clear, there's nothing clear about it. I just, like, for example, right now, maybe in the last year, I've been very interested in inflatables. I don't know why. That's just where my head's at. It's not something I can articulate. I enjoy that they're so simple, they're so kitschy, they're tacky, they're lightweight, they're inexpensive to get made, whatever it might be. And I enjoy that balance of the work I make is somewhat so inaccessible and the opposite of all what inflatables are. And I think as I go on and on in my career, I really enjoy referencing things that aren't fancy luxury product like I once did in the early part of my career. So like just drawings like an old cup or a plastic bag or whatever it might be is of more interest to me than drawing fancy stuff. So for example, this exhibition we're coming up to in April, it just inflatables, and somehow it led to us building a public swimming pool in the desert. And how I'm not too sure. The exhibitions I like to create, I like it to be a little unusual. Like I'm not going to just use an already pre-existing swimming pool and do an exhibition at the one that
icebergs.
Everyone does.
Icebergs.
That's the one. Thank you. Icebergs. You could name 100 people who've done an activation or something have gone to icebergs. I'm like, what's the place where you're not meant to have a swimming pool? Boom, in the desert. Well, let's do something silly and let's do that.
It's all coming from, though, you got this idea around inflatables. I think you articulated really well why that's interesting. You've built the whole exhibit. So from inflatable, you get to swimming pool pretty easy. Like there is a core concept there, right? You are working from a core idea.
Sometimes it's, like I said, it's not something I can fully put my finger on, but I think someone mentioned the other day, there's been a common theme in my exhibitions and my works, not something I've consciously thought about, but there's a simplicity and a childlike playfulness in those exhibitions, in that people of all ages come to the exhibition and you can be an art connoisseur, you can be a kid, you can be a grandma, you can be literally anything. You come with 100 different people from all walks of life and everyone has a different experience. And generally speaking, people will walk away with a smile on their face. Not going to say they necessarily loved it. I'm not looking for worldwide acceptance or happiness. Just people will all have a different experience and they generally just have a smile, which is what I really enjoy.
So you've gone to Pinterest, you've explored ideas, landed on inflatables, you've gone to pools, you've gone to outside Vegas. You've got a vision in your mind. How do you make sure that vision is accurately represented?
I have a vision in my head, which is, I call it like the 80-20. So I have 100% vision in my head. I know that it's never going to look identical to what it is in my head, but we give it a red hot fucking shot. So I'm like, I know we kind of ebb and flow and things work out and things don't. Like some things might be just way too expensive. I'm like, okay, we're going to have to scale that down. We'll do this, that, the next thing. But essentially, we're building a public pool in the desert. It's an inflatable swimming pool. Yeah, initially I wanted to actually dig into the ground, but like that was actually a little bit too much money. So even I had great people who work with me who were like, CJ, that is going to cost too much. I'm like, ah, shit. So then we try and come up with other alternatives, which are sometimes more cost effective, given that these exhibitions only go for 3 days. You know what I mean? So these are not things that live there permanently. So you kind of have to have a balance of like how to make it as extraordinary as possible without it costing $1 billion.
And can I just ask what are the economics on this? Is it funded, or will you hope to sell? You'll have art there to buy, I assume, and so you're creating a story around the art or around the pieces of the exhibition that you can buy.
So yeah, that's kind of how it works. So there'll be a concept which is like the inflatables. They are flowers, and they flower inflatables, and they're all multicolored. Most of the time, the originals will be sold before the exhibition opens. The editions will become available on the last day of the exhibition. How is it funded? I fund it internally. It's one of those things, like I mentioned a while ago, it was, I reinvest a lot of what I make back into what I do, which kind of doesn't make any sense because it's kind of like this wheel that keeps spinning. And yeah, just enjoy creating. I can't really explain it. I just enjoy creating visual things so much. I almost don't really care what I get out of it, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So I think we've got fingers in the other pies where I think we'll make true wealth, but I do not believe I'll make true wealth out of my art, but I just have too much fucking fun doing it. That makes no sense, does it?
No, it does makes a lot of sense because I think we in the world of sort of advertising rely on a client to fund what we're doing. We rely on a client to ultimately say yes to our ideas, whereas you have none of that, right? You've got amazing liberation because you're funding it. You are both the artist and the client, right? Like, and that gives you enormous freedom, which I think, you know, we kind of dream of.
Yeah, I'm very, very fortunate. And occasionally we might work with... collaborate with a brand, very rarely, because in your world, you know how the brand wants, you know, a certain point driven across, and I'm just really hard and fast in what I want to do, and some people might want to pay for posts. I'm like, you're barking up the wrong tree, I'm never going to do it. Or clients might come with all this money and say, well, will you do an exhibition, it's a collaboration, and they want their brand slapped all over it. I'm like, that doesn't feel right. Let's see, like my audience is tuned in, they'd be like, CJ, what are you doing? Your big banana, like that looks silly. And it never feels right. I'm like, I just want to create things that are just removed from a big brand slapping their shit all over. It just feels funny.
But from someone who started doing, you know, Gucci bags and putting food on Hermes plates and things, that's interesting you saying that. So do you think as you've developed... Because, you know, it would be very easy for you to do that kind of stuff. Like they could have all been, or a lot of your early work could have been brand collaborations, right? Because the brand is very front and center in your work. So it's interesting to hear you say that.
But you know what? In a world where every influencer is getting paid, this is just what I see. Every influencer, everything is SponCon. Everything is sponsored content. I cannot stand it. I can't stand it because I follow them, but I don't, everything... Everyone's trying to sell you something. And I guess so am I to a certain extent. But yeah, none of my posts, none of my social media are sponsored. It's just shit that just happens in the studio and things that we're creating. And yeah, no amount of money I'll get paid to do sponsored content and pay for post.
CJ, do you work with brands? Do you create things for certain brands and as commissions?
No, not as commissions. I'd say we have a lot of conversations with brands, and quite often it gets to a point where they're like, great, so you'll do this and you'll do this many posts without this, without brand, and it just feels like complete sponsor. It's not creative. I'm just getting across the point that they want, which is fine. I am just very focused on the artist that I am and the practice I'm building. I just not interested in doing it.
CJ, so you are a fascinating artist. And so what we do on this show is we put everything to the pub test. And the pub test is a bunch of people in the pub, and we run the art by a group in a pub test, and we listen to what they say. We showed them the Kanye West dollar bill and the Chanel Crush bag. And this is what they've said about yourself and a couple of pieces of the art that you've created.
Ooh, is this good art? That's such a big question, and I think that's the question of all time.
I always think if that it takes like skill to make it, not just imagination, then it's respect. Okay, that's pretty
I
cool.
I appreciate the skill.
But if that's just like something they've done on a computer, I don't think it's worthy of like awesome art.
Myself looking at it, it's just kind of scrunched up paper or I don't know.
Well, what makes good art? It's subjective, isn't it? I mean, I can see the different concepts behind it. I mean, it's not something I'd probably have in my house, but I can appreciate what the artist is trying to say.
Is this good art? I mean, I'm not overly thrilled by it.
I think having it shown just on Instagram makes it seem less valuable.
I don't think it matters if you're in a gallery or not. I think if you connect to art, then it should be as valuable as someone's willing to pay for it.
Look, to me, I almost feel like it makes it seem less valuable.
I think you can argue a case for both, but I'd probably lean more on the side of kind of makes it more. Like, you look at artists like Banksy, for instance. Like, Banksy's famous for just doing street art or that kind of stuff. Just because your art isn't sat in a gallery doesn't mean it's not important or not good enough.
Kind of showing that it's easy to throw away money on designer items, but even that becomes trash eventually.
I think it's saying how fragile materialistic things are. Like, you're looking at the Chanel bag, it's something that's supposed to be representing like class and prestige, but it can just as easily be crumpled into rubbish.
I don't know, maybe there's like a deeper meaning, like, I don't know, money's not everything, or...
Surely it's making a comment about capitalism, which is kind of funny from a perspective that it's about Chanel. Capitalism's crumbling, I don't know.
Sure, why not? This passes the podcast.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it does.
I understand the concept.
I'd find it hard to say yes. I don't think it passes the contest.
I'd say it would, because it's something you bring up with your mates and be like, have you seen this, by the way? Like, can you work it out? Yeah.
What do you think of their reactions?
Their reactions are art world in a nutshell. There's no right or wrong. Everyone's going to have their own opinion, and that's what I love about this. It's like you can't look for worldwide acceptance or for everyone to love what you do. You know what I mean? You just got to go in with your blinkers on and create your own shit, because not everyone's going to like it. But yeah, humbling as hell. How good is that? I love it. And I really like it.
In the world of marketing, you know, we're kind of obsessed about what customers say. We spend a lot of time researching and, you know, but in your world, do you seek the feedback? Do you get it on Instagram? Do you pay attention to it? Do you care about it? Like, how much does it sort of play a role in what you do?
You guys are asking me questions that I just genuinely couldn't give five fucks about. And maybe that's why this has all worked. I'm like, you know what's great about Instagram? People fucking give you their feedback whether you want it or not. And that's what's so humbling about it. Like, people just give it to you. You're like, it's also great because when you put stuff out there, people give immediate feedback, whether it's good or bad. They'll call you out on your shit. There's nowhere to hide. You know, like, it's a wonderful place. It's a very, it's a place that everyone has a saying, you know, whether they art world or not. So everyone's an art critic on Instagram. So it's great.
Yeah, everyone's an advertising critic as well, right? But obviously you don't let it, you know, if you're not too worried about being a bit polarizing, or some people like, some people don't, or like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't seem to let the feedback from the audience affect you too much.
I actually think it's important to have that polarizing conversation, because if you're an artist who made work that everyone fucking liked, you're just not going to get spoken about. It's yep. boring. And you should stop. You know what I mean? So it's like, I think the only reason I've been able to keep going in my career is because I have been polarizing. People don't necessarily like or agree with what I do. Sometimes it's a bit naughty. Sometimes I don't recycle enough. Sometimes I don't do this. And sometimes I might actually nail it, but very rarely. I actually think the only reason I've stayed somewhat relevant is because of all the fuck-ups I've had, to be honest.
So, Jay, the David Walsh, the creator of Mona, apparently used to mark every piece of art with the O, that little tech thing. And if a piece of art got rated really, really positively, he would take it off the wall and get rid of it. So anything positive, too overly positive, he thought wasn't hitting the mark.
To be honest, my art's very friendly. It's very nice. The scale is big with the exhibitions. There's nothing fucking naughty about it. And don't you, like, that's what I mean. I'm like, I've got some shit in my tank that, like, I can just feel like my whole personality is cheeky. My whole brain is a bit naughty. I don't care for the rule. And the fact that people still like my art, I'm like, I get frustrated by that because I'm like, I love the art that's naughty. It's inappropriate. Like, who's the artist who just did a big inflatable ages ago, but like a big inflatable butt plug in the middle of Paris, you know, like brilliant. You know, like all the good art, in my opinion, is just naughty. Someone's copyrighted someone else. It's just in the news for all the wrong reasons. And I think that's art that people really, you know, pay attention to. Just drawing beautiful flowers is not going to get me anywhere, to be honest.
Yeah, people find that liberating, I reckon, when they see people get away with that kind of stuff, which I think there is a bit of your, I think there is a bit of that in your artwork. But are you going to dial that up, I think, is what I'm hearing.
Why not? I think I've got less and less to lose. In that, I give less and less fucks as I go on because, like I said, we're building other things that you don't know about. And as those other things grow, there's less and less pressure on my practice to make any money. And I think because of that reason, it'll just end up getting bigger and bigger because I'll give less and less fucks about it. And I'm just like, fuck it.
Give less fucks is easy as your career progresses, and I don't mean that in any disrespectful way, but it'll be interesting. CJ, this has been amazing. I just love you. So we talk a lot about creativity applied in a commercial setting, it being the world of advertising. I think what you've done is taken creativity into the world of commerce in an art setting, and I think that's so hard to do. And again, I think, you know, hats off to you for all you've achieved and all you're about to achieve as well in the future.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And thank you for having me on, and I'm glad that you guys are getting back up and running with the pod. As I got to the end, I was like, where are these motherfuckers gone? What are they doing? Anyway,
we're glad
you're back. It's awesome. Well done, guys.
Well, thanks. And thanks for coming on. I mean, it's late over there in New York, and, you know, we really appreciate making the time. And I think the other question I wanted to ask you, CJ, before we go, is because we talked earlier about, you know, Australia as a sort of maybe not the most inspiring place creatively and how New York is, but is there something about your Australianness that you think has been important to your career? Because I think you just say it how it is. I think you called the New York Times a bunch of fuckwits at some point. I mean, you've got this amazing sort of, you know, I don't know, there's something about your Australianness that I think is sort of important to your, I don't know. Do you think that's a part of it? Is it, especially in New York, or I'm sure it's a part of it when you're dealing with people over there?
Australia is a fucking great place, and there's a lot going on. I just think people think there's just this, like I said, this magic fairy dust that happens in New York and other parts of the world. And there is, like I said, New York is amazing, and I love being here. It's given me a world of opportunity. But Australia's a vibe. Like, it really is. We're going to move back eventually, and I can't wait.
Are you?
Like,
yeah.
We'll get up to some naughty shit back in Australia. Like, done.
Well, you'll also get to the point where, because, you know, I raised three kids in New York, and you get to the point where your kids become very American. And that's quite a sort of, it's a real point where you go, oh my God, my kids are so American. If I don't get them home right now, they're going to stay American. And that was a big motivation for me. But
how old were your kids when you moved back?
I got three boys. My oldest was 11 when I moved back.
Oh, three boys.
Yeah, and he was 11. And he was 11 when we moved back. He's still got the accent, but we've sort of
beating it out of him.
We've beaten some of the Americanness out of him anyway.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. I'm really grateful for you having me on. Like I said, I've listened to all the apps, and you've had some extraordinary guests who are very, yeah, they're in the, like, you guys are in a totally different world, but not too dissimilar. But yeah, I'm very grateful to be here. We could have a whole podcast just about art and does it mean anything? The answer is no, it doesn't. You're just making it up.
It means a shitload. It's unreal. I love it. It's great. It's very, very important.
Thanks for coming on. You are awesome. It's great to meet you.
Take care, CJ.
See you, CJ. See you later. Bye.
Thanks, guys. See ya. Bye.
Wow. Wow.
Possibly my favourite ever guest.
How amazing to have been able to create this life where she can live in New York, create her own art, self-funded. You know, it's amazing.
Yeah, and also the openness to straddle the world between art and marketing and embrace both to the point of where she kind of mentioned that she was an average artist and a really good marketer. I don't believe that. I think she's obviously very, very good at both, but not seeing one as compromising the other. It's just like embracing the whole thing. I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, totally. And I think also just an incredible, so self-deprecating, so didn't take herself too seriously. I mean, the sort of perception you have of a successful artist, she seems like the opposite.
No, that's right. Less wank and also and more putting in the work, being very practical about her art, about having to find the opportunities and then, you know, getting the inspiration, getting the work done, being obsessive about it.
Yeah.
And then having the lightness of touch to put all that on Insta and go nuts with it is great.
Yeah, but there's a lightness of touch and a not take yourself too seriously and yet an unwillingness to compromise at all.
Yeah,
right?
Like, it's just, totally.
Yeah. I think marketers can learn a lot from her, don't you think?
Yeah, I can't, and you know, having a direct relationship with the customer and even just cutting out the middleman, I just bloody loved. But I can't wait to see what she's going to do next.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome.
All right. God bless.